Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Tabletop Game Talk, a show where we talk about tabletop games of all types. I'm one of your hosts, Josh.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Kitty.
And I'm Spencer.
Welcome, Spencer. Today we'll be talking about gaming groups and the types of people we sometimes find in them. But as always, first we go off topic for some news, announcement, and feedback.
Yeah, I think some major news. We have a reoccurring special guest.
Yay!
Not Fletcher. Fletcher's a friend of mine. This one is Spencer.
Not a friend of yours.
Definitely a friend of his.
So he's going to help us talk about different gaming types and such.
But I will do that, but before we go into that, I would like to ask, what is the difference between a reoccurring special guest and a host?
We can sometimes not have you around, and it wouldn't be weird.
And you don't get your picture.
And,
in the logo.
And we don't change the logo.
Whoa. I don't get my picture in the logo?
Nope.
Well, according to Chris, you don't.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure. What's the reason behind that, Chris?
Because I've already done the logo twice now,
and it
doesn't fit any more people on it.
Yeah, all right, true. Fine, but I'm still going to get paid, right?
You will get paid twice as much as either of any of us get paid.
Sweet.
Yeah, because you're a special guest.
Hang on. Yeah. Maybe this is too much work, but could we not, like, superimpose like a very small Spencer head onto one of those figurines at the bottom of the logo?
Hold on. Would I still get my special guest pay?
No, because then you would actually...
I don't want to forfeit my special guest pay. Yeah.
Can we just like Microsoft Paint that one? Yes.
A little big yellow
happy I'll actually
face.
Have to think about this. That might be worth it.
Yeah. Well,
money can't buy happiness.
Right. No. It really can. I think there's been evidence of such.
Oh. Yeah. Up to a certain point, I think.
Chris's collection of games?
Yeah.
I don't know what could make you happier than that.
Yeah, it's really... Yeah. Actually, that's a great segue.
What are we going to do? You have no one to play it with.
Kitty, what are we going to do about my collection of games?
Chris has too many games.
Yes, he does.
So, we are doing a holiday giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tabletop Game Talk will be giving away a few games. I'm a big crafter, so you're going to get some crocheted monsters, probably some candy. I haven't actually put it together yet, but I'll be posting a picture on Facebook any day now of the actual gift giveaway.
Wow.
So if you want to join our giveaway, if you would like to receive this awesome gift, please email us tabletopgametalk@gmail.com and include your name. And we will get back to you guys. If you want more entries, like us on Facebook, retweet our tweets,
share our
Facebook page, anything.
Or even write a review. I think we'll get you an extra
iTunes review.
If you write an iTunes review and you tell us, hey, this is me, I wrote this iTunes review, that's worth 5 entries.
Oh, that's it by itself. Boy, I like that.
Yep.
Wait, so that's all our listeners need to do?
Yeah.
Send us an email.
They don't have to like pay anything to like for a raffle ticket.
No.
Because this
no
is
way.
Some sweet swag.
Yeah, because
we're
this isn't
here.
Just like Hasbro games we're talking
about.
No,
this is gonna be premium games. And to be honest, I really can't part with any of the games I've opened. They're like my children.
Sure.
So I'm gonna buy brand new fresh games to give away.
Oh wow. Mm-hmm.
So
that's awesome. Wait. I thought
the reason for this was because you had too many games.
The inspiration for this was because I had
this
too many
This is why
games.
You still have too many games.
That's probably true.
So this is going to be quite a valuable game that you give away then. This is going to be, a rough ballpark of the
guaranteed
value of the
game. To be within the $50 to $100 range.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Very generous of you, sir.
Yep.
Retail. Okay. Are these collector's items?
They might be, probably not.
I don't think it's the same game yet.
I'd say no. But...
Maybe autographed by the host.
Oh, there we go.
Something like that.
Yeah, and we might even put a special guest or two on the autograph list.
That was a good suggestion. You're earning your special guest pay already.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And I'm good looking.
This is why he's doing radio. So, yes, email us at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. Like us. Share us. iTunes review us, and we will. When are we going to do the drawing?
December 18th. We will pick a winner and record that day. It will be announced on the podcast on December 20th.
Yes,
nice.
So have your email to us and your share and like by December 18th. We'll announce it on the 20th. And if all goes well and we have all the addresses in place and you respond to us quick enough so we can send it to you, I'll make every effort to get it to you before Christmas.
Nice. And so, then you can give it to somebody.
And then you can give it to somebody. Yeah. So
re-gifting.
Re-gifting. I should note that that does not apply if you're outside of the continental U.S.
Yes.
But if you are outside and you do win, we'll find a way of getting you that said game.
What, we don't exchange gifts with foreigners or something?
I just can't guarantee that's going to happen in 4 days.
That might be expensive.
Yes. So, okay. So we'll keep reminding you in the next few episodes. Keep emailing us, tweeting, social media. Big push. On to our next quick segment, games I have recently purchased or kickstarted.
I thought you said this was a quick segment.
Well, it's quick this time because I don't have any new board games. I'm still trying to get through all the ones we have right now. I did pick up the Middle Earth 5th Edition role-playing game, though. Ooh. This is Dungeons & Dragons 5th Edition, but with Middle Earth lore and classes and stuff. Spencer, you might like this. It's zero magic. It's really like kind of a Tolkien world where wizards are not something that, you know, normal people are. So, and it's kind of cool. It has...
Oh, they seem to use a lot of magic in Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, but the Lord of the Rings, that storyline is, you know, the handful of very exceptional people.
That's true.
Right. I mean, like, how many members are in that wizard circle that Gandalf's part of?
Like, there's like
seven.
What, seven. Something. Yeah, seven or nine, some odd number.
Yeah, and it's like it's a big world.
Yeah.
There's seven wizards. That's pretty low magic.
Yeah. So it's not that there's magic that doesn't exist, but the player characters themselves don't have magic.
Right.
Mm. You know, you're soldiers and archers and rangers and things like that.
And so maybe pick up an artifact here or there.
Or an artifact, yeah. So it's like, you know, the whole campaign can center around one silly ring.
We don't have to run
ring.
Into Tom Bombadil, whatever that stupid guy's name is.
You mean the greatest
Some
character?
Some people are going to backlash about that.
The greatest character in the history of fantasy? Yeah. Tom Bombadil?
We're a house divided.
That's
on
a bold, that's a bold claim. But I mean, both sides of that. That's a bold claim.
So... Also related to D&D, I picked up Volo's Guide to Monsters, which is another monster manual. But the first half of this monster manual just talks about like the history and origin and story behind the monsters. Doesn't actually give any monster stat blocks or anything like that. The second half is monster stat blocks and things like that. But it's a special edition cover. Got it signed by a few people as at GameholeCon. So,
wow.
It's a cool thing. And I kickstarted. I finally pulled the trigger. We talked about it briefly on Bluebeard's Bride. I did a little bit more digging on what this is. This is a role-playing game that's meant to be a one-shot game. So it plays in 3 to 4 hours. You can play it multiple times. But the interesting thing about it is it's a five-player game. So plus a GM. And each player is playing a different aspect of the bride's personality.
Oh.
Weird.
Yes. So the entire group is controlling what the bride does. And there's like mechanics for who's actually in control at different times.
Huh.
So I'm like, all right, this is intriguing enough.
Avant-garde.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I got to try this out. And of course, I had to get the limited edition and all the different play accessories and stuff like that.
Well, of course.
By the time you hear this, if you are interested in... this particular game, Bluebeard's Bride, the Kickstarter will be over, but they will have like a late backer thing that you could go to their website and go to. So you guys have any other things to talk about before we talk about our game that we can't stop talking about?
I'm ready.
All right. So three games of Pandemic Legacy today. The four of us, we did pretty good.
We were on a hot streak.
We
smoked it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won three games in a row. So what? We beat February, then March, then April. So now we're starting May.
Yep.
With zero funding.
With zero funding.
Zero funding. And we have three objectives we have to make now.
Yep.
I'm really hoping we turn up a new objective because I do not want to be one of the ones on the board right now.
I think...
And no spoilers.
I was just going to bring that up, that I think we should avoid talking about a lot of specifics here because we've been surprised at some of the events that occur and the stuff that goes down.
Yeah.
So we are planning in the future of doing a spoiler alert, like... Yeah. All of the windows opened Pandemic Legacy once we finish playing all the way through.
Yep.
But for now, we've been trying to keep the spoilers out.
We have at least 7 games to go, but it could be more, depending on how well we do.
Because we are not going to win this one.
The last one was a little bit close.
I think we might.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I can say, confident. so far, I keep being more and more surprised.
We're on a hot streak, man. Yeah. We got this.
Yeah. Well, we're getting more efficient. You know, we're learning how all the characters work together and, you know, really seeing exactly where
we to do things added in a new way. Character, which really made things
different.
I'd say easier.
I honestly don't know how we could go into more specifics about this without spoiling it.
We're being careful, but
yeah. Needless to say, lots of cool things are going on.
We're very excited about it. Still really enjoying Pandemic here.
Yep.
It's a good game.
So, so I think that's about all we need to talk about off topic. Let's see what this button does.
In this episode, we're talking about gaming groups and the people that make them up. Where do we play our games and with who? What are the kinds of players that we like to play with or the kinds we don't? What about gamers of different levels? How does that change how or what we play? Let's find out.
Yeah, so last week we had a great question. Well, not necessarily a question, but a great comment about, you know, the types of gamers we have.
Right.
It's actually one of the reasons I was talking to Spencer, and I'm like, you know, you are definitely a different kind of gamer than the rest of us. So this would be a good topic for you to jump in on.
I don't know what that means.
It means, well, we talk about you a lot on the show.
I did notice that. Right. It's a little weird.
Yeah.
A little weird.
Yeah. Well, now you can be on the show and you can defend yourself.
Yeah.
All right. Let's do it.
So, I mean, I haven't played with Spencer that much, so you're going to have to clue me in, you know, what kind of, you know, kind of player is Spencer? Let's start
with that. Spencer has described himself both as a gamer and in life as being chaotic neutral.
Right. What does that mean? I'm still a little bit confused. I understand the chaotic part.
Yeah. I've always described myself chaotic as good. Chaotic good.
Chaotic good.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what does that mean?
Between good and neutral.
Yeah.
So, how do you approach a new game? Like, when a new board game comes down, I'm explaining the rules, or someone's explaining the rules, you're playing it for the first time. What is your goal for that first time you play the game?
Understand it.
Okay.
Okay.
Like, that's a big hurdle for me, especially because you tend to like more complicated games than I would normally and naturally approach on my own. So oftentimes when a new game is presented to me, especially in that context, if I understand what happened, I feel like I'm the real winner by the end.
Okay. So you're not aiming to be the winner. Like, you, it's not like a competitive, I must win.
I mean, I would like to, because I don't think you can really learn the game unless you're trying to do what you're trying to do.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You're trying to win.
Right. Right. So I want to understand it well enough that I can wrap my head around the strategy and form a real strategy.
Okay.
But on that first play, you're probably not crazily invested in winning, even though you're trying to win. Or maybe you are. Maybe you're competitive enough that I'm like, oh, maybe I'm in with a shot here. I'm invested now.
Normally, I'm like not that invested in winning at all. Okay.
So, yeah.
Like, I mean, I like to win. Like, it feels good. Right. When I'm trying really hard and I think I have a good idea and I pull off the win, that's great. But no, I mean, the first day, if I understand it well enough, if at the end of that game I went, oh, I feel like I could put a good strategy together here, then yeah, I feel like that's a good first play.
That's a healthier way to be.
I mean, if you play a game three times and you still don't understand it, you're a loser.
That's a good way of putting that, I guess. Yeah.
No, and I don't want to be that loser. I want to be a winner, at least in the fact that I know what it means to win.
And so would you then agree with Kitty's comment that you have chaotic elements in your style of play beyond that?
Maybe. I think it depends on the game.
Wait, have you ever seen that come into play, Kitty?
World War V.
I feel like I've been set up.
Is this like a sore point?
No.
Kitty doesn't have sore points for the games.
It is. In World War V, Spencer, we all started out, it's like a Risk style game. Right. If you want to learn more about it, listen to our episode about Pyramid Arcade. We go into quite a bit of detail there.
It was a pretty cool game. I like it.
It is a really fun game. But at the beginning, you are each in your own continent and you want to spread out.
Right.
So every other player moved into an empty territory that was in an unclaimed continent.
Right.
Except Spencer, who moved into my territory.
Ah.
So that's just the kind of thing. Like, it's not necessarily that you're a chaotic like you don't like go out of your way to do that. You just, you don't think the same way that I think a lot of people do. So you make a move, and to me at least, it is very unexpected a lot of the time.
Wild card.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, call that card. Chaotic.
Maverick.
No, I think in that case, that was just an example of being aggressive earlier, right? And a lot of times I find that aggression, you know, obviously depending on the mechanics of the game, but is key to winning. It's important to be bold and to push forward. And especially a game like that, that I've never played it before. I'm just sort of figuring it out. By being aggressive early, I can see what the consequences of aggression are.
Right.
Because everybody else is doing the safe thing. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to learn more if I do this.
Right.
And now I'm seeing how it's playing out on both sides.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that chaotic player. So if you find that you're losing a game and you're just like, all right, there's no way for me to win, are you going to be just kind of doing things to make it more interesting for you, just kind of messing with the other players?
I think, again, it depends on the game and the situation, right? Mm-hmm.
What about in that risks sort of scenario? Let's say you can see that you're a minor player.
I really feel like I'm being grilled here. So, for our listeners, the three of them are just staring at me. Right? Like I'm being interrogated. And there's a bright light above us that's shining on me.
Yeah.
Am I under arrest?
Shining on all of us.
Yeah, we're recording
well,
it for,
we're
going to
pick
history.
On like Josh next. And yeah. We'll no, but that's fine. Bring it. Some more.
I'm just surprised. I can take all three of you.
Actually, I do want to go around the table and let's classify ourselves in a couple of different classifications. Because one of the things...
Don't put me in a box, Chris.
We try not to.
He's a maverick.
I'm trying to take you out of the box right now. So we're talking about types of gamers. Now, I consider myself a hardcore game for fun kind of person. Mm-hmm. I love learning new games, love playing new games, but I'm not really playing to win. I'm playing just to have fun for the experience of the game. Mm-hmm. So kind of using that language, you know, Kitty, what would you consider yourself?
I think I'm the borderline poor sport. I must win or at least have like a chance of winning, or I tend to get grumpy and throw pieces.
All right. And we've already talked to Spencer. We have a decent idea there. Josh, what do you think?
Very similar to Kitty's description. Yeah, definitely hyper competitive. I want to see where I am on a leaderboard or a points system, and I want to win. And I'm very invested in it, and I might get angry and upset if I don't. But I'm getting better at that. And I think part of what plays into that is then the kind of analysis paralysis thing when you are that competitive and you care so much about winning, you want to spend as much time as possible thinking through every scenario. So I can be accused of that from time to time, rightly, Chris. Yeah.
I will observe between the two because I think your end goals are the same, but how you manifest it during the game
is different. Because
Josh, you look at each turn in detail and just agonize over what you can do.
Right.
Where Kitty will look at the game in the past and say, if only someone would have not done this, or if only someone would have not done that.
Yeah,
and
she holds onto a grudge.
And
one thing you'll find interesting is, and no offense, Kitty, but you almost always point to someone else screwed you over as opposed to you not making the right move. Josh is...
That's exactly what she
That's
does.
Fine.
Where Josh is like always trying to make the right move.
Yeah.
And when he looks back, he's
very
like...
Very internal versus external forces. Yeah.
I'm like, oh, I screwed up.
I also blame the dice a lot.
Yeah, sure.
Right.
Yeah. Anything but you.
Yeah. I'm perfect.
Yeah. I mean, obviously.
Yeah. You can agree on that. Definitely that competitive, hyper-competitive style.
All right. So we've had a few game nights where we invite our friends over to play games.
Yeah.
And not all of our friends are what I would consider gamers. Some of them are more casual than others. Mm-hmm. A lot of times these, when you have a large group of people, you kind of break down into doing party games. You know, you're not playing any hardcore board games. If you were to say, you know, what would you do if you was like, really, I just want to play this really intense Twilight Imperium or a 5-player game of Risk or something like that, but I still want to have people over and having fun. How would you approach that? Like, how would you try to make that happen?
Too bad. I mean, some things aren't party activities, right? I mean, I guess you could have something where there's like one room where like the serious game is going on, and then there's another room where the party game is going on or whatever. But I mean, a game like five people playing Risk or that kind of thing, Twilight Imperium, like that's is really engaged. You can't walk away from the table, socialize, and then come back because
you have to
see what everybody else is doing on their
move,
and then heaven forbid you're not there when it's your turn, and now you're holding up the game.
Yeah, it's a tough one. I mean, I think that kind of thing, you've got to plan in advance, like you're saying. It's like, get the people in the room who want to be there for that kind of experience. So I think it's probably planning beforehand. Yeah.
So essentially invitation only.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We're inviting a small group of people over. We're going to play this game. Oh, you're having a game night? It's like, well, not really.
No, we're playing a game.
Right.
This game.
Here's another idea is you could do it tournament style. Ooh. So get a bunch of people together, all on the same page, want to play the same game.
Right.
Say you've got four different Risk boards.
Right.
Right?
Because playing Risk just once in a day isn't enough. Right.
Oh, don't get me wrong. I in no way think this sounds fun. I'm just trying to help out our hypothetical gamer who has this very important dilemma of how do I do this really nerdy and involved task with all of my nerdy friends.
This is why he's special guest.
Special guest. Special guest. Yeah, you could do a tournament style, right? Like think of the way like a poker tournament game go, where you've got lots of games going at once, and then if you're eliminated, you're out, and then those people can go play their own games or whatever they get. But the central thing there is it'll coalesce over rounds, eventually ending in one game, and then somebody wins that.
Yep. Yeah, I think I like that idea. I think one of the things.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Obviously, we're not really talking about Risk. Board game parties with Risk being the centerpiece. Risk Legacy, maybe, though. We need to get back to that after a pandemic legacy.
Risk is better. Risk is everything.
But in any case, having it so it's kind of a structured competition or structured just game event does allow people to focus a little bit more. And you can socialize within your game because you know at a certain point you're going to switch and you're going to play a game with other people. Mm-hmm. One of the hard things about having like a game night or kind of like a game party or something is it really kind of breaks down into just social talking. And even if people want to play a game, there can be so much other stuff going on that it kind of detracts from it.
All these people are busy having fun and socializing.
Yeah. Well, we've had a few game parties where it was like a real big party. Me, Chris, and Spencer used to all live together.
Right.
And what it always ended up being is we'd set up a few different tables. There'd be like the coffee table game, the dining room table game, like a card table set up in a couple places game. And it really ended up being like one of us at each table, like teaching the game basically and like recruiting people to play our game. And then like the guests rotated amongst us, it seemed like.
I didn't know that was supposed to be my job. I did a bad job at that party.
No, did. You sat and played Settlers of Catan, I think.
Oh, yeah.
And you had that all set up. Yeah. And Chris had, I think you were playing a Flux card game at the coffee table, maybe. I was playing the Walking Dead game for a while. We were all.
This was several years ago, and you have some very lucid memories of it.
It was actually a very successful event.
I remember everything.
I think one of the things we did for that, which really helped, is we had the game set up on the tables before anyone showed up.
Yes. Right.
So all we had to do is say, someone who knew how to play it said, hey, who wants to play this game? And then you'd sit down and then you'd play that game.
Right.
And oftentimes those games would cycle. So one would finish and then, oh, I want to play. And two, three new people would
sit down and
play it again.
Yeah.
And would you have backup games as well in case people kind of wanted to break off or not really?
We had a few backup games.
I think
we
just had like a big stack of games somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, there were all the games were there, but we just had set up some key ones that we knew would be easy to get people into.
Or ones that we really wanted to play that we needed people to get into. Yeah.
And then the couch area, the coffee table couch area, that was where the casual gamers that wanted to play something, you know, Telestrations or we played Werewolf there or, you know, more of a party game area. Right. But we still had the, you know, 4 to 6 player game satellite tables that people were sitting at and playing games at, which worked out really well. So now if we're outside the house, you know, meetups and stuff, you know, Josh, you mentioned going to meetups. And I'm curious to hear, I've had some experience with meetups and stuff, but I'm curious to hear what your impressions of like board game meetup groups.
They often worked a little bit like this event that sounds like you ran. I imagine it went a lot smoother for you guys because it's all people you knew and a lot of them probably knew each other. So it's easier to kind of get groups together and self-organize amongst friends. But the idea is that there's a big library of games. You know, people might bring their games, or, you know, the organization or group, it has a bunch of games, on hand anyway. And then people turn up and, beforehand, it's been decided that certain people will bring certain games, and they might even say, do you want to play with me? And then when you get there, you know, someone's going to teach you how to play. If you don't know how to play a particular game, hopefully the organizer is going to, you know, say, well, look, there's an open spot here, here and here, you know, where do you want to go? And then there's a variety of different games happening at the same time. I think the difference there can be, you know, it's just the kind of luck of the draw, the type of people you're going to play with.
Yep.
And you might get a really great group of people that you really get on with, or you might really not. And especially with the meetups, I think, you know, sometimes there can be an element of people just like, you know, looking for an area to socialize because, you know, I don't know, they're new to a city or something. So it can be a bit awkward, you know, if right. people don't know each other. But, you know, I've had some good experiences as well where, you know, people were great, played some awesome games. So yeah, on the whole, I'd recommend them. Definitely.
I think, Kitty, Spencer, you guys have not been to like a meetup, right?
No, we don't like people.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
And people do not like us.
I can attest to that. Because I've actually gone to a couple of meetups that were kind of in like a side room of a bar.
Right.
So they'd have like appetizer specials. Actually, they didn't have the specials for the board game group. The board game group chose to meet on a night that had appetizer specials and drink specials.
Right.
So you could be like sitting in the back and, you know, but they knew that the board game meetup group was there, and they would kind of shut off that area.
Yes.
So that nobody else had to see them.
Yes.
Which is an interesting thing.
So they don't scare away the customers.
So they don't scare away the customers, yeah. But I think it's interesting because now it's actually becoming quite popular, at least around in Chicago, to have like game nights. And to have, I mean, we've always had bars where you can play Connect Four and, you know, Yahtzee and stuff or on a small
Chris's
shelf.
Favorite game.
My favorite game, Yahtzee. But now you're starting to see more and more complicated games. I mean, and by that I mean things like Settlers of Catan and Ticket to Ride, you know, more of these designer games that have gone mainstream.
And I think like some of the draw for people to go there as well can be, I bought a new game and my friends can't schedule us to meet up and play it. And I want to play this right now. So if I go to this meetup, I've got a ready-made group of people that will just play with me.
Yep.
So yeah.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, and setting up, if you were to lead the meetup, there's a lot of pros and cons to like starting up your own group. One of the biggest cons is you're so busy trying to get people to make sure they're playing games that
you don't end up playing.
Yeah,
it sounds like a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. It's a lot of work to make sure other people are having fun.
And I don't like when fun is a lot of work.
Yeah.
All of your fun, you like turn into a job.
Not necessarily a job.
No, really. You take on a lot. That's not a criticism because it's really you shoulder that burden so that the rest of us have this structure and this platform that we can, you know, participate in and have a good time.
Yeah, we can't all be like me, though.
No,
I mean, I can try to teach. It just it's a slippery slope.
Oh, you don't have to teach. I don't want to be like you.
Got
I'm
it.
Just glad that I have you, so that I can use you to have fun.
Well, we're gonna get into the like that fun. Mm. I'm gonna get into this is next on our list of the types of people we're gonna meet at meetups. Actually, one other place I want to talk about is game stores, board game nights.
Mm-hmm.
And is another very similar to meetups where you're going to meet a lot of interesting people. And there were two different sites that I got a top 10 types of people, type board game personalities. One of them is just kind of a 10 types of board game personalities. The other one specifically, 10 types of people who ruin board game nights.
Oh, oh wow.
They overlap. So I kind of want to touch on them because I think we all have a little bit of elements of these things in ourselves. And it's like, at what level do we have them?
I was going to say, I'm afraid to find myself on this list.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's important to know because we don't always know how we're coming off to other people, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, oh, you're super obnoxious. Like, oh, I didn't think I was being obnoxious. I thought I was being really interesting. And, you know, no, you're really obnoxious. So, but that's hard to say. So what I want to do is kind of go down this list and just what does it mean if to be this type of person? And are we that type of person? Or do we see that in each other type of thing? So we're just going to start right off the top here. This is a list from Board Gamers Resource or Board Gamers Source. This is their 10 board game player types. Mm. The very first one they call the genius. The way they put this is the person who knows everything, who wants to plan it all out, also known as the alpha gamer. Mm-hmm. You know, they know better than anyone else. This is what you should do. This is what you do. Now, Josh, you've mentioned a couple times that you think that I can do
this. I definitely think you fall into this category. I mean, it not necessarily in that harsh negative light that you put it into. Like, you know, you definitely know more than anyone else because you've spent more time reading the rule book and you understand the system of the game more than anyone else, because that's what a part of, a huge part of your enjoyment of the game is understanding the system and how it works. And you've said before that you could just open the rule book, read through the rule book, and never play the game and still have a great time. And so you understand so much about that game that you, yeah, you can jump ahead of other people's logic.
Also, don't just read the rule book and understand it back to front. You go and you look at reviews. You watch videos of other people playing. You look up the strategies online.
Yep.
So in particular, when you tricked me into playing Dice Masters with you for a while there, I would go to work and come home, and you would have like spent 6 hours researching a strategy, and I would have been at work, so I didn't. Well, and you would just trounce me every time.
In my defense, I wasn't researching one strategy for those 6 hours. I was researching all of the strategies.
And then picking the best one, and then using it against me.
In order to crush her.
But, yeah, no, I'm going to jump on the train here and say, yeah, this is exactly you. I don't think, and like Josh said, it's not really a negative thing. You're not a like sort of a like an obnoxious know-it-all during a game, but you are like the resource typically that the other players will turn to, usually because you set the whole scene and say, well, all right, I already know how this is, and I'll take it upon myself to explain it all to you. and I actually certainly appreciate that, because I hate the idea of sitting down and reading through a 30-page rule book.
Yeah,
but if you can do that, and then I sit down and you can explain it to me in 5 minutes, I still won't understand, but I will kind of get it.
Yeah. I actually hate reading even 13-page rule books. I try to get everything online. Read it there. Watch it online. Watch it played. And then browse through the rule book. Because I get really bored just reading rules after rules after rules if I'm reading it to play.
I think I'm actually more likely to read the rule book cover to cover than Chris is. But I don't own the rule books, so I don't do that as much.
Yeah. Honestly, if I hand Kitty a rule book or something, she will know the rules better than anyone else at the table. Now, she won't actually say anything until it's like, oh, no,
that's not to my advantage.
It's interesting because I think you've got a strain in you that's also, you're the kind of player that wants everyone to have fun. I know that like Asian game players often tend to be more this type. I think it's a cultural thing where, you know, if they're playing, I've heard this said, if you're playing racing games in Asia, like the person in the lead will slow down to let the other person to catch up. So it's more interesting and everyone feels like they've got a shot of doing that. And you've said before that you're happy to kind of just decide on your own. I'm going to give myself a handicap. I know that if I play this way, I'll be behind, but I already have all this knowledge and I don't want to just crush everyone unless we're playing Dice Masters against Kitty.
Yeah, well, that's important.
Are you just saying that because Chris is Asian?
Is he Asian? I have no idea.
He's not Asian.
He looks very white and Caucasian.
Is Caucasian a type of Asian?
I think maybe that's the next
type of gamer on the list.
So the next type of they classify as the mind reader, and this is I had to kind of read into what they meant here, but really what they're talking about is the people who play the other people and not necessarily play the game.
Sydney.
I was just going to say that.
Yeah.
So it's that manipulation of personalities. Cosmic Encounter is a really good example of this type of game where this
and
works.
And Sydney loves that game.
I also love that game. I like being able to like form alliances and convince people that, no, this is the right move for you to make because this is going to be good and this is going to be good.
I can tell that Gloria would love that kind of game as well. She's definitely enjoys that kind of manipulative action of, you know, playing the people.
Yeah. Spencer, what about you? Are you in any way, do you like that psychological gameplay or...
I like an element of it, but I don't like it to be too heavy. You know, where the entire gameplay is who can read each other, manipulate each other more. I mean, we've talked about this, yeah, right? Like, you're just, it's, it is the a realm of enjoyment for terrible people.
Well, that's social deduction.
Not that I'm not a terrible person.
No, do you remember when you were playing Cosmic Encounters? It was the one where we had like the game. Different races. I was the loser and Chris was the warrior.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that.
And you had to like make alliances with people, decide who you were attacking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I remember that now. Yeah.
So what did you think about that game?
It was fun.
All right.
What about the alliance building and like how did that make you feel having to do that?
Like turn having after to turn? Play the other people because I hate it.
All right.
And we've already talked about how much I hate it.
I feel like I'm at like a therapy session. Like, how did it make you feel? I'm like, it was good. They're like, no, open up to me.
But that's what we're talking about here is the type of player who would enjoy Cosmic Encounters, the type of player that likes working with different personalities. Mm. So the question is really, do you like those kind of games?
Yeah. Like I'm not wild about, like, it's not like, oh, that is the thing that makes me love it. But it's a type of game I can get into.
Okay. Mm.
So, you know, I'm kind of neutral on it. I can approach it, but it's not going to make me go crazy for it.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. All right. So the next type of player is the referee.
Mm.
Now, I'm pretty sure this is the kind of kiddie description.
Yeah.
But it's like always looking up the rules, always knows basically what's right, what's wrong, follow the rules.
Kitty really likes rules. I've been hearing this recently.
Kitty loves rules.
Right?
I do. I love the rules. I love following the rules.
Right.
I'm such a goody two-shoes. You love
scolding people.
But this is the type of the player who is looking up rules at the table.
Mm.
So they'll pause the game. And actually, I don't think Kitty has actually done this. She doesn't really pause or stop the game or anything like that. But if someone's like, oh, wait a minute, I don't think this is how the rule works, everyone must wait till I find what's going on.
Mm.
And I've actually seen people do this where like they'll find something that doesn't say what they want it to say, and they'll just kind of put it around quietly and just sit there and sulk because everyone's like, so what's the rule?
So are we? Yeah. No, I'm not that bad.
No, you're not. Yeah.
I have noticed that a lot of times when we're playing a game, Chris will explain the rules and he has the rule book, he has read it. And then while we play, I'm the one that has the rule. I'm sitting there, I'm flipping through, making sure. Because most of all, I think that I'm more of a visual learner. Mm. I really like looking at the pictures, diagrams, whatever's going on in the book, and seeing the game played while I kind of go through that. It's easier for me that way. The rules stick with me more, but...
I like to clarify while playing the game, like, is that really how this rule works? If something feels wrong.
Yeah, because I won't stop gameplay, but I will be like, I'm going to look this up while we keep playing, and I'm going to let you guys know for future reference, because, like, I don't want to keep breaking the same rule over and over again.
Well, I mean, it's pretty crucial to playing the games as well. I mean, essentially a game is a system of rules that you play within, so...
Is that... What is a game?
That's a different podcast. But yeah, you're right. And honestly, a lot of times when we play a game once, I'll come back, and then the next time we play the game, it's like, okay, and here are the two or three different things we did wrong.
Right.
But throughout that particular game, we were playing it with the rule set that we thought applied. So we could still have fun with that game.
As long as everyone's breaking the rules in the same way, it's usually pretty fair.
Yeah. I'll do that on occasion. Be the, hold on, stop, we got to look this up. I don't do that. I think my role in a game group in a game, I guess, varies a lot based on the type of people I'm playing with.
And
there's sometimes like if everyone's been sort of confused and don't really know what's going on in the rules, I'll be like, oh, hold on, we got to look this up.
Or right.
If the game's gotten really heated because there's a lot of people who really care about who wins, and now there's like a crucial decision on the line, I go, you know what? Let's make sure we get this one right because there's going to be some consequences if we don't.
Now, I have at times found while reading, you know, clarifying something, saying, oh, we've been doing this wrong for the last hour. But if I bring this up right now, there are people at this table that are just going to flip it. So I'm just not going to mention that at all.
Yeah. Yep.
The diplomat. Yes. Another little world to go in there. I like that. Okay.
So the next type is the master strategist. This is your analysis paralysis player, looking for the best possible move in every single turn.
Everyone's looking at me suddenly.
I would also say Sydney can be this player too, though.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
She's a very much the optimal move. Like, and she will not just do it for herself, but she likes to see everyone's optimal move and let you know. Like, and we talked about this a little bit before, that she's not pushy about it. But, like, she just wants you to know, like, hey,
well, she's
this is out there.
She's great to play, like, one-on-one strategy games with, because not only does she look at her optimal move, but she also then looks at the optimal move best that I would do next, and then what should she react to that?
Oh, wow. Like, that's good.
She's always, like, three steps ahead, yeah.
Wow. So, I mean, she's basically like a computer artificial intelligence that's playing out all the different possible scenarios, and she still does it relatively quickly. Like, it doesn't really take her that long
to put all these things together. I'm jealous of how fast she does things.
Yeah.
Yeah, because
I don't think that quickly.
I'm actually kind of similar to her in that regard. It's just that she's better at it. Like, I have the disposition of that tends to be my approach. That's my demeanor in the game, is I want to really know, like we talked about earlier, you know, what am I trying to do when I first play a game? I want to figure out the strategy. Once I've got the strategy down, I should be able to tell what a good, you know, if not an optimal move, you know, the good move is. And I want to have a game plan there. And Sydney just picks it up and runs with it right away. Yeah. And she's got it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
it's Josh, that mathematical brain of hers.
Yes.
The accountant of her. Josh, now what you'll do, you'll analyze a move and then follow one path in your mind and then switch over to another path and then back to the other path. And I think a lot of times you will kind of get yourself in a circle of, should I do this? No. Maybe I'll do this. No, maybe I'll do this. No, maybe I should do this thing that I thought of. No, maybe over here. And you just kind of keep considering the same moves. Again, you still come up with the best
move. Especially when none of the options are great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right? If you're that really analytical type, if there's a good option, you'll end on that. But when it's just pick one of the bad options, that gets really hard. Because now it's like, okay, which is the least bad?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's the problem I can solve next turn? I don't really know. Okay, maybe I'm thinking about it all wrong. What does the other player want me to do?
Yeah.
Right? I'm hurt either way. Now how do I help them the least?
Yeah. It's figuring through all those options. I think with that mindset is, you know, my possible options, kind of like what you were saying with Sydney, my possible options are these things. Let's figure out what they are, the good ones are. And then, yeah, what someone's going to respond with. And then how am I going to respond? And there's all these branches that you could go down, and you're just following these all in your mind and deciding what's likely and then reacting appropriately. So it's just, I don't know, it's satisfying when you're in that competitive mindset of like, I want to do that optimal move. I'm going to look through every option there is so that I feel I've made the best choice. Because it's almost like buyer's remorse when you do the move and you're like, oh, I didn't think about that long enough because I just missed that other branch that was better. And I just, oh no, I can't take it back now.
Mm-hmm. So you need to learn to get past that.
Was it the Duke?
Yeah.
That you guys were playing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh man, I have never seen Josh take longer to take a turn. He's flipping over every piece on the board, trying to remember what everything does.
You know, listening to you describe that, Josh, actually helped me realize one of the differentiators of the types of games that I enjoy more than others. And that's when it comes to identifying a strategy, if there's a game that I can develop a sensible strategy around that's guided by principle. Of like, I don't have to analyze the tactics of each move. It's sort of goal based. All right, there's a principle. If I can take this thing, then I'm good. And I can just focus on that goal. And then just maybe try to stop somebody else from doing that other thing. And I just got to focus on, and every given turn, what can I do towards that? Then that gets easy. I can approach it quickly. And there's some games that are a lot easier to approach like that than others. Yeah. Some are very, very tactical. And those very tactical games, I think it's very easy if you have that type of mentality to sort of fall down that rabbit hole.
Yeah. I see.
Yeah, because I mean, when you look at a game like Homeworlds, and for those who have not played Homeworlds, think chess. But if you're looking at that kind of thing, there is a strategy that you can end up going towards. I want to destroy your ships. I want to destroy your star. Whatever the case is. But if every single turn you don't know what the overall strategy is, then you have to consider everything.
Right.
And that can actually slow you down quite a bit.
Right.
So that's one way to get out of the AP way, is exactly what Spencer said, is look at a way of like build towards a strategy, not the optimal move in every micro.
Right.
Focus your strategy towards a long-term goal and move each move towards that goal rather than trying to make the optimal
this
move.
This is good advice. Yeah.
This is especially important for like point salad games and things.
When yeah.
In the moment, you can't really make the best choice. All you can do is try to move yourself towards the goal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've started to learn that. I mean, again, it's, you know, as I've been playing games with you guys over the last few months, I've still been very much a newbie at these sort of things. You know, I did a little bit before, and it takes a while to figure these things out. Like you say, my mindset is want to make the optimal move in that moment at that time. But for those types of games, a long-term strategy is better, yep. Definitely.
Now, one of the things that bothers me with his approach towards a point salad game that you bring out is most of these games, is you don't just have one possible strategy, right? There's lots of possible strategies. And you can usually tell how well you're coming along relative to the other players. You can't in a point salad game, at least not very easily. A lot of times things are really up in the air. And
it's a lot trickier. And that's kind of what the whole point of point salad games are, is, you know, you have to pick a strategy and go and follow through that strategy, because you're not trying to optimize every moment. You're saying, this is how I am going to try to get points by the end of the game. And I'm going to optimize that particular sub-strategy, because you can't think about everything.
No, I get that. What the piece that's missing to me is I want to be able to see how my strategy is doing compared to other people to see if I need to change strategies. Yeah. And it's harder for me to notice that.
Yeah. And we have come to the conclusion.
I think that a good point salad game is like there's enough paths that you can kind of quickly do a rough calculation based on what's in front of you.
Yeah. And actually, Kitty's been wanting to do a point salad episode for a while. So we will do that.
Chris keeps changing the show notes after I type it in.
We will do one in 2 weeks. Not next episode, but the one after will be point salad.
There's so much to talk about. And we've played so many of that style of game.
But speaking of Kitty, I'm going to segue into our next type. Ooh. And again, this is kind of like a pick on all of us thing. Yeah. This is just a mean episode. The sore loser. They get mad when they lose.
I've been better.
You've been better. That's true.
But you're still a sore loser. Yeah.
And it's not even necessarily mad. No. You know, it's just, oh man, I could have done this or I could have done that. And everything's about how, like, you lost versus celebrating someone else.
She's mad.
Yeah. But she's mad at the situation, right?
She gets mad at me.
Oh, I see.
It depends on who won. It depends on how they won. If I feel like, and also it really makes me mad if I feel like somebody was picking on me during the game,
right?
And they didn't win, but it let somebody else win. When I felt like, to maybe have an example here, me, Spencer, and Chris are playing a game, and I feel like Spencer is picking on me, and I couldn't beat Chris because Spencer was picking on me.
He could have just let you win. I mean,
you're getting upset just talking about it. Is there a game in particular, or is it just the abstract idea of this happening?
I don't remember what game it was.
No, but I understand the concept. It's like, imagine you're in the lead in Risk, and so the weakest player, let's say it's Spencer, decides, well, to keep myself in the game, I should attack the strongest player, which was Kitty at that point, and then you end up not winning. It's kind of like, I was on the path to winning if only Spencer hadn't come in.
It's usually like there's two players who are very close to each other. Who there's like two strong players and one person. And especially in Risk, like to get the cards, you have to win an attack. That's a big thing. They have to attack one of those two people.
Yeah.
It's really going to weaken one of the two people who were equally matched. I think just part of the game.
Yeah.
And I am not always the best at dealing with that aspect of the game.
No,
Jumping to the conclusion of all these personality types, this should dictate the types of games that we want to play.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So Area Control, even though as much as you like Risk, it is really not a game that if you're not winning, you enjoy. Because you do get picked on if you're in that bad starting
area. It's weird,
isn't
it? Because Kitty's like all about Risk. And yet, actually, that's going to like trigger your, oh, man.
This is key to understanding, Kitty. There's a lot of things that she enjoys, even though they're sort of structurally designed to like aggravate her.
Right, 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 right.
But she still likes it.
But yeah, me too. But I'm like that. Like I kind of, I think it's because the reward if you do win is so juicy to me.
Yes.
Yeah. Like if I win this game,
there is nothing more satisfying than taking over the whole world in Risk.
Which is actually the perfect segue to the next type, the jolly winner. So the person who, once they win, they just can't let anyone else forget about it. Oh. I won. I was amazing. Did you see what I did there? Did you see how well it
sounds more like a gloater.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't think the name was very apt.
Or just basically overly excited.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, being a graceful winner and a graceful loser, a good loser, a graceful winner, those are important to be like, I want to play a game with you again.
I was going to say, yeah. Okay. I know that I've alienated some people from not wanting to play with me again. I'm very lucky that Chris is a magnanimous and generous person, or he wouldn't be playing with me anymore.
Oh, shucks.
I remember this. Like, I definitely, when I was younger, more so, like, just really enjoying beating my brothers at any computer game or board game. I was just like, yeah, you guys suck.
But that's...
Where do you fall in your family? Just curious.
I'm the middle.
I think it's a middle child thing. Yeah. I am also a middle child. And there's something, like, so delicious about it.
I also think there's a difference between trash talk with your siblings and being like a poor winner. Like, there is a difference.
No, you're right. You're right.
Because doing it with siblings is fine. Doing it at a meetup where you don't know these people.
Oh, no.
That's a totally different thing.
Yeah.
So another, this is one of the hardest type of people that I had to play with. The snob. Mm-hmm. Always talking about, talking down about the games or why they don't like it or why this isn't a good game or why we should be playing something else. Like spades or something like that. But
no, hold on. Is this, you really think I come across like this?
I think for anything that has that's overly complicated, and especially point salad types games, you spend more time talking about how complicated and convoluted the game is than trying to enjoy the game.
I don't do that until after the game. Or when you're explaining it to me at the beginning. In the middle of the game, I don't do that. No, really, really. I think this is an important distinction, right? Like when I'm in the game, I'm doing everything to enjoy it. I don't let that get in my way of enjoying it. And I really don't, I think, try to stop other people from enjoying it.
No, I don't.
But I think what will happen a lot of times is, you know, you'll tell me the game. Tell me about the game. My eyes kind of glaze over a little bit. And you're like, no. I'm like, all right, fine. We give it a try. We play. And they're like, well, what do you think? I was like, it's kind of complicated. A little much there. But I don't think you can hold that against me for having an opinion.
No.
Yeah. I think it's when we're trying to pick a game sometimes.
Yeah.
Like you're more likely, you've got like your games that you are very partial to.
To be fair though, if I don't put my foot down on this, we never play my kind of game.
That's true.
Sure.
Right?
Sure, yeah.
So I express that a lot, but.
And really, you are, of the four of us, I think you have this more than any of us, but.
I still don't think
it's still really, really very small.
Tenuous connection. Yeah.
Now, I think it's more like that, you know, you're an opinionated person who's not afraid to, you know, share your opinions about a particular game. Well, so it might come out, right?
Yeah, I'm more concerned about the people. When you go to a meetup or something, you're playing with a group of people, and someone's like, okay, fine, I'll sit down and play this stupid game with you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man, this is just such a dumb mechanic. It's like, oh, this card is so stupid. Why would anyone ever do this?
I remember we were at a convention, and you had a game, like, tucked under your arm that you clearly just bought, and someone saw you with this game, obviously you just bought it, and was just like, oh, that game is so dumb because it's broken like this, and this.
Yep. And it's like, that's the type of person that's actually bad. To not like a particular kind of game, that's fine.
Sure, yeah.
Like, I don't actually, I tease Spencer, but that's not really what I'm talking about here.
Yeah, yeah.
The snob is the person who truly just disses the game throughout and just tells you why it's so bad. Why what you like is a dumb thing to like.
Yeah, because as I say, like...
It's like when you try to make me play Werewolf.
Well, not even that. Like, you just don't like that game, which is fine.
Yeah.
Because I think to be a snob, you also have to care quite a bit.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Think of like a wine snob. Has to really have a passion for wine.
Yep.
Right? I might have some wine that I don't like, but I'm not a wine snob about it. I just go, I don't like this wine. It tastes terrible.
Right. Yep.
I don't go like, oh, like I don't have to get anybody an impression of a wine snob. We all
know. Yeah, yeah.
Right? Or a beer snob.
Everyone knows the voice, yeah. Though. Oh, no, it's very nasal. Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely. So, but I think that
it's
is a good
floral.
Point. It's the people who care so much.
It's flowers. What do they mean? It tastes floral. Sorry, go ahead.
They care so much that they just need to tell you why you're wrong about everything. Uh-huh. Yeah. They're the right about everything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The next one is the bored gamer. Okay, yeah. Let's just play this game. I'm fine.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm here.
They're kind of dragging their feet playing the game. Yeah. And everyone's very aware of it.
You're very aware that they're not having any fun.
Yeah.
They're just sitting down to go through the motions.
Yeah,
you know,
similar to the snob, but in a different direction.
Yeah,
it sounds like they really don't care about
this game. Like a snob cares too much, and they don't care at all.
The person who's bored just obviously doesn't have any vested interest in what's going on.
They're looking at their phone, and like you know, they'll push some pieces around when they're told to.
Pick on my gender, but I think this often is the bored girlfriend.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the girlfriend, sometimes the boyfriend too, but like the significant other that was dragged to board game night is playing because their significant other wants them to. Mm. We need this many people to play the game, and they're just like,
right.
I'd rather be somewhere else.
Mm. Yeah, it can be really that any tag-along friend is like, oh, you'll really like this new game, or you'll really like board gaming, or you'll like this hobby, and they're just really not into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
This is stupid. Why am I doing this?
It can really, I mean, obviously, it really ruins the atmosphere in the game. I mean, I had a werewolf game that I put together once, and this girl just did not like it whatsoever. She'd never played it before, but instantly she was just not having it. And, you know, people would try and interact with her and she would just be closed down and just be like, no, like, and she was just giving away her role as well very quickly, because she was the werewolf. It just kind of ruined it for everyone else. So that's a tough one to play with if they're really bad.
Yeah. It's really hard. Like I have a hard time, like anyone who's bored, like we've talked about this, around like when I'm role playing and having particular people at the table that seem bored, they're on their phone or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But like, in a board game is kind of the same thing. If you have enough time to be playing Candy Crush on your phone, you're obviously not that invested in the game.
Yeah.
You know? Just make it more entertaining.
You could make it more
entertaining. I just realized as well that I can be a tiny bit guilty of this if I'm playing a game that I was really invested in, and then I suddenly realize towards the end of the game that I have no way of winning whatsoever.
Then you just withdraw from the game.
Exactly. Or I'm just like doing crazy moves that just kind of, you know, that just take up my turn very quickly and just kind of don't really add to what's going on.
Right.
And it's like kind of ruining it for the other people if you're not playing to the best that you can do. And yeah, I think there have been moments like that where I'm just like, actually, maybe I should have like not displayed how pissed off I was that I clearly wasn't going to win and I couldn't be bothered anymore. And so, yeah, this is good. This is highlighting things.
It's very therapeutic. Better on.
Yeah.
I have been turned into this player before. I think my problem, though, is when there's another player who is strategizing too much about what to do for their turn. I'm just like, ugh, I can't anymore. Like, I can't watch this person agonize.
I need to be careful. This could be me.
I think we were playing Terra Mystica at...
that game.
Yeah. A couple years ago, at a board
game
party.
That game is so complicated. Yeah. Why would you even get that game?
I feel like Chris like woke me up at one point in that game. He's like, come on, it's your turn. I was like, oh, really?
Oh, okay.
Finally?
Yeah.
Like,
so
yeah,
now to the opposite extreme, the nice guy. This is a player that doesn't take the game seriously enough and just tries not to offend anybody.
Mm.
So you're in a competitive game. You're supposed to be trying to knock people out or making moves that advance you. And this person will just always do the nice thing.
I don't think I've ever met a nice guy.
You actually, we all have, and I'll tell you in a second. But here's an example of this. Playing Settlers of Catan.
Right.
When you roll sevens, you get to move the thief to some place, and then you get to take a particular good from someone you move the thief adjacent to.
Right.
I have so much fun with the thief.
It is also completely valid.
I haven't played that game in forever.
To move the thief to the desert. Mm-hmm. To some place that doesn't actually touch any city.
Right.
And if you do
to be
this,
a nice guy.
To be a nice guy. Right. So you're like, yeah, I don't want to take it from anyone, so I'm just going to move him over here. That's the nice guy. It's like you're really not trying to play to win.
Yeah.
And it can invalidate certain wins because, like, to Kitty's point, if this person could have done something to screw someone else over, that would have put you in a better position. Now they didn't, even though that would have been the best move for them to make, which would have been, you know, Sydney or, you know, Josh, you would have said, oh, no, that's, like, that's clearly not a good move. The best move would be to do this.
Right.
Like, this person has a way of causing chaos, even though they're trying to do the exact opposite.
Now, to be fair, though, I believe there are some legitimate strategies that can look like the nice guy, especially early in a game where you need to cooperate with people and you want to keep your options open.
Sure.
Right? Like, oh, I'm not gonna make anybody angry now. Now everyone kind of owes me a favor. Or you want to sort of play people there. Yeah. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like, the nice guy type, there's definitely somebody who just the whole way through.
Right.
Is just, good. Yeah. So anyway, I think that's an interesting one. We've only played, we have a friend who tends to play this nice guy role fairly often. And he's just genuinely a really nice guy. But I pick certain games to play with him so that that doesn't come out as much. It kind of forces him into a situation where you have to make a choice.
Has Josh figured out we're talking about him yet?
That is definitely not me. I'm going to screw you all over, don't worry.
So the next person is the victim.
Right.
Assumes any move against them is a personal attack.
That's Kitty.
That's Kitty. No. Yeah.
We talked about this earlier.
That's fair.
It dovetails with the sore loser thing.
Yes.
It really does. Nothing's ever my fault. You're all bullies.
Yep. It's like, if only you would have done this or you would have done that.
I think I've gotten better over the last few years. I definitely don't get as emotional as I used to. Like, I'll still, like, go back over the game and think of, like, all of the moves. But I think I'm getting better at what I could have done and what other people could have done. Yeah, yeah. Like, it's a, because it is both ways affect the game.
Know? And it really does just take practice sometimes. Like, being so invested in a game, sometimes it's great. I have certain games where I love to win, and that's what I want to do. But it's a subset of the games I enjoy playing. And you have to learn how to, like, not take things personally. There's the Game of Thrones board game. There's a many of them now, but this one was probably 3 or 4 years ago. It's an area control game.
Is it called Board Game of Thrones?
It's not. But this game,
should be.
It's very much Risk-like.
Best name ever.
It's very much like an elimination. You have to gang up on people and eliminate them. And it's a six-hour game.
Wow.
So you can get eliminated or just put into a situation where you can't do anything. And it's hard not to take that personally. You know, and the group I played that with, we just vowed never to play it again. There's no way to play that game and walk away having good feelings.
Right.
Yeah.
So the last one is the Alliance Maker, where you set up alliances in the game that were a game that doesn't allow that. So if you can imagine, again, maybe Settlers of Catan's a good example of this, where two players just like, okay, we're going to work together to make sure that those two can't win.
It's perfectly valid in Settlers, though.
It is perfectly valid, but it's annoying it's when it happens every single time. So this type of player wants to always set up an alliance. And sometimes not even public alliances. Secretly. All right, Josh, we're going to go in and we're going to play this game. And I'm going to trade you all the brick. You give me all the sheep I need.
And we'll just and one of us two is going to win.
Yeah. Right. And
like price fixing.
Sort of like price fixing.
But within a board game, so it's way less consequential.
Yeah. So could you guys think of, that was the first of the top 10 list, and we will not go through the other because we're already running long. But is there any other type of player you guys can think of that we haven't really covered?
Did we cover the wild card?
Not really. Like that
chaos
player.
I mean, we talked a little bit about Spencer's game style, and I think that he can be the wild card sometimes. Especially, and I can do it too. Like, once you've figured out you're going to lose.
Yeah.
Especially. It's just easy to, like...
Let's do something fun and crazy. Well, didn't see that one coming.
So sometimes I think I do that when it's apparent I'm going to lose. But it's not just about injecting chaos into the game so much as, all right, this is the only shot I've got at coming back.
Yeah.
It's not like, just to throw chaos in the game for chaos' sake. It's just There's like a but risky there is, and
but there is,
unexpected
but there is a
move.
Type like that.
Yeah.
Who will, who will do something that in no way has a chance of even benefiting them, just to spoil the game and make something crazy happen.
We can call them the kingmaker, really.
Yeah.
So I can't win, but I can influence who does.
And who and, do I dislike the most around this table? Who do I feel most grieved by during this game? I can make them lose,
although
they might win right now.
In Settlers, there is one of my favorite things to do is a bit of this wild card thing. Where I'm sure all of our listeners know how Settlers is played, but you know, just to set up to is, you know, you've got resource cards, right? Everyone's got different types of resources and you can trade amongst them, right? So one of the things I like to do is, let's say I have brick and and Chris has brick and he wants sheep. And so I tell him that I have a sheep, even though I don't. And I bargain him for a while, and I eventually agree to trade him a sheep for a brick, and then I hand him a brick card. So then when he looks at it, he just gave me a brick card and I gave him a brick card, and all I did was waste 5 minutes arguing.
You actually do?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what's the thing behind that? Just to like,
what I like
mess
about
with
it,
his mind, like, mess psychology.
And it, what I like about it is it makes people angry, but then they realize they can't really be mad because you didn't really screw them over or anything. Like, you didn't steal from them or swindle them.
Right.
Yeah.
You just mess with them for 5 minutes.
Yeah. I do like to mess with my friends.
And it's definitely a type of player that actually actively does want to see other people lose. Like, not only do they want to win, but they actually enjoy the Schadenfreude, that German term for enjoying other people's misery.
Yeah,
so
well,
there is that as well.
I think that ties back into playing with your siblings.
Oh, definitely.
Well, if someone derailed you,
completely.
Right? Like, you were on a path to victory and they just cut you off.
Oh, revenge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Vengeance.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, Kitty is very much like this.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
I do want to get to this 10 types of people who ruin the board, but I'm just going to read through these and we can briefly respond to them. The new player that doesn't listen to the rules and then keeps asking questions as you start playing.
I'm really sorry if I've ever been this. I feel like I have sometimes.
I don't think you guys have, but it's
I'm kind of like that.
Yeah.
But I think that's a not for lack of trying.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
You have the sloth, which is similar to the AP player, but the sloth is just goes slow. They're not trying to analyze anything. They're just like, what are my options again? You know, really not paying much attention to anything.
Gotcha.
The scarily intense player, like, win by whatever means necessary, do whatever has to. the commander, basically this is another version of the alpha player, but they're like, no, you do this and you do this and that's, you should do this here. And you should go over there. The cheater. Now this is a game type of player that it's, and actually Spencer has a story about, I think your uncle,
grandfather,
you know,
Yeah.
And where they, well, we just know he does it, and part of the fun is trying to catch him at doing it.
Right.
Uh-huh. But for the most part, if you know that someone's a cheater, you just stop playing with that person, right? It's like, the game is not worth you lying to the rest of the group to play. So I think that's an interesting one.
Yeah. I could talk a lot about cheating in games. I think it's an interesting dynamic. Like, in some situations, it's, like, terrible and petty, and in others, it's, like, it's like you're pointing out and making light of how petty the game itself is so that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. But still, if you're not playing, and this is not something I fully agree with either, but if you're not playing by the rules, then why are you playing type of thing?
Well, maybe, but then this could be a whole podcast because there's elements where you could say, well, truly great players will bend the rules to the point of almost breaking.
Yeah. Actually, maybe that's a podcast subject. You know,
Munchkin, where
cheating is a
like
little bit
part
there.
Of the rules.
Yeah.
Right.
Even Cosmic Encounter has cards where that allows for cheating. Mm. But is it cheating if a rule lets you cheat?
Yeah.
You know, that's the weird thing.
Well, like so another one that my grandfather would cheat in would be Scrabble.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, you've got the blank tile, it's like a wild card, right? And there's only so many blank tiles. If you played with him, there'd be like 7 on the board.
Because he just flipped it over.
Right. But
it's like the backside of an E.
Right. So, but I think part of the appeal of that is like, come on. Like, if you're letting him get away with it,
yeah,
it's funny. And that, it becomes like another level of the game. Like, you don't even care if you win anymore.
Oh, you got a fifth one of those blank ones. I didn't even know they had that many in there.
Yeah, it's, we need to take this into another podcast for sure. The next one is the insanely strict rule follower, where if you find out an hour and a half into the game you've been playing a rule wrong, you just scrap the game and start it over.
Oh, wow. I've never seen that happen. I don't want to see that happen.
The paranoid player is very much similar to the victim, but they're just always assuming that everyone's going to gang up on them. If I do this, you're going to do this to me. And if I do this, you're going to do that to me.
Before it even happens.
Yep. We should really play a game where we all, the three of us guys, agree ahead of time to gang up on Katie.
Oh, my God. She won't talk to us for a week at least.
And then during the game, be like, just deny it. Just deny.
We are not colluding.
That week's never podcast is just going to be like you guys talking and everyone's
in tears.
Like
I'm pretty sure Spencer just blew someone's eardrum out too, but that's okay. I've adjusted the levels.
Sorry.
There's the trash talker that takes things too far, like crosses the line. Oh. Like once it starts getting personal, it's not.
I kind of want to see this just for the entertainment value. I've never seen that.
The bragger who takes like winning to a contest of just like, I'm so good at this game, there's no way you could beat me. What would end up turning Kitty into, if we all did gang up on her, the board flipper.
Yep.
Where once they see they're losing or someone's ganging up on them, screw this game. If I can't win, no one will.
Oh, yeah.
It's been like 10 years since I've played the board game.
I don't believe I've ever done that in my life, and I kind of want to. I don't think I'd ever be emotionally driven enough to do it, but it'd be kind of enough to, like, I don't know, just feel like it'd be kind of fun.
What the hell is this game?
Right.
Yeah.
The last time I remember, it wasn't even like an actual board. This was piece throwing, not game flipping, because we were playing, it was like a live Monopoly. We were like running around the neighborhood. And it was like an organized group of teenagers by like a person who like just made up these rules, and they didn't really make very much sense. And there was no way to like make it fair or make sense. And just like one of the teams was so far ahead, there was no, like, and we still had to do it for the next like 2 hours. And I was just like, forget it. And like, I threw Monopoly pieces everywhere.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Throwing computer game controllers around.
So, you know.
So this topic actually took a lot longer than I expected. But, you know, I think this is an interesting topic. Just once you know the kind of player you are, you can decide whether or not you like that element about yourself or you don't, and you can start adjusting that and try to change how you play with other people. So I think sometimes it's good to kind of step back and look at these things and like, how much am I like that versus, you know.
And how much is that affecting the game? Because let's face it, we're all here to have fun.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I believe that the takeaway from this session for me is I should be more snobby about my games. Is that...
We'll work on this.
I also think it affects what kinds of game you choose to play. Yeah. Because I do know that if I'm playing a game that is bringing out a side of me that I'm not a big fan of, I'm not going to play that game again.
Yeah.
Which is, I think, why I really enjoy the point salad games. Because it is kind of like, it's more luck of the draw towards the end. Like, it doesn't feel like somebody screwed me over. It doesn't feel like I'm the victim. It doesn't feel like I have to blame other people. Like, it's just, you know, it's more fun for me that way. It doesn't bring out that side of me. So it's like, those are the kinds of games I'm drawn to.
Are there any particular games that you shy away from because you don't like the way you react to them?
Social deduction.
Monopoly. I can't with Monopoly. Any game... But yeah, social deduction games, any game where somebody's going to like accuse people of something.
Any game where you feel like you're going to be attacked.
Yeah, where somebody's like picking on it. Like, and it's weird because I do like area control games, which can still feel very like somebody's picking on you. But I think it's because there's a lot of luck in those. I've learned to not blame the people, but to blame the dice.
And there's enough strategy that it's like, I could totally win this.
Oh, yeah. But, and, like, I've seen people, like, hole up in Australia with, like, 6 troops and then, like, come back and risk. That's, like, the beauty of those games is, like, even if you look like you're out of it, you're never really all that out of it, you know?
And
you can always make something of it.
Right.
All right. Speaking of hope... hopefully this episode can end now.
The longest episode of all time.
It actually is our longest episode. Yeah. So, Josh, why don't you take us out?
Indeed. Well, thanks for listening. And remember, we always want your feedback. So consider leaving us an iTunes review and an email us with comments or questions at tabletopgametalk@gmail.com. You can reach us directly on Twitter. I'm at Josh's Blund. Chris is at Game Master Chris, and Kitty is Kitten L. I've no idea what Spencer is.
We'll find out. Email.
Fair enough.
Or Twitter, even.
Or Twitter.
Of course.
What's an internet?
We'll tell you. Of course, you can always leave a post on our Facebook page, Google Plus group, or our BoardGameGeek.com pages. And as always, we'd like to thank Tristan Dunman for our cover art. She can be reached on Twitter at Tristan Dunman. Until next week, when we talk about holiday game-giving ideas, keep playing games and having fun.
Good night.